Calling all my Asian squad everywhere! It is time to put a spotlight on our story! Welcome to your dose of inspiration with me, Richard Juan.
For our episode today, we have with us a best-selling poet and novelist from New Zealand. She's a Goodreads Choice Awardee. She wrote Love and Misadventure, Lullabies, Memories, and The Universe of Us, among others that all became international bestsellers. Last year, she published a book called September Love. She has been in the forefront in popularizing poetry among the young generation. Folks, let us all welcome Lang Leave. Hi, Lang. How are you?
Hi. Hi, Richard. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for gracing the show. I know you're very busy writing all the time. Thank you so much for taking time out.
Thank you.
I would love to know a little bit more about your background. So when you were young, you would write poetries and pass it on to your friends. What sparked your interest on poetry at such a young age?
I remember coming across this this poem when I was a kid. It was in a children's book of poetry. It was by Emily Dickinson. And it went, "A word is dead when it is said, some say. I say it just begins to live that day." And I think that's the moment that I really fell in love with poetry. And I think, you know, naturally, if you love something, then you just want to create your own. So I started writing a lot of poetry, and I've been doing that since grade school. And I was also hand-making books. They just became a base for me to transcribe my poetry. And it got passed around the schoolyard, and I still get people on Facebook writing and saying, "Oh, I've got a little book of your poems still." So yeah, it's just something that's I guess I've always done. So when it came to you know, my poetry going viral online, it really felt like I was doing the same thing. I started by self-publishing. I was just putting a book together and sending it out into the world, I guess.
How do you self-publish a book? With.
Well, I did a lot of research. I saved up for quite a while. And I used a company called Lightning Source, and it was just it wasn't easy, but it wasn't difficult either. I think it's just a matter of learning as you go and putting one foot in front of the other. But the book did really well. My first book, Love and Misadventure. So within 3 months, I'd sold over 10,000 copies. It was amazing. It started making charts, it just snowballed. And then I was approached by some New York literary agents. And, I remember there was a week period where everything was happening all at once. It was really crazy. And, my partner, Michael, I remember he woke me up one morning. He's just like, "Oh, you will not believe who's contacted you on your author page." And I went to look, and it was the buyer for Barnes & Noble. Who'd contacted me. Yeah, and in that same week I was signed with our writer's house, and then I got the publishing deal. So it was a pretty intense and crazy week.
So Lang, you grew up in a refugee camp in Sydney. So are there characters or stories in your poetry that were inspired by your experiences there?
Yeah, absolutely. I was born in a refugee camp, and then we migrated to Sydney, Australia, and we settled in the small town of Cabramatta. And Cabramatta was a migrant settlement, and there were a lot of people who settled there from war-torn countries. And it's one of the most diverse places on planet Earth, really. But back then it was quite a problem area. There was a lot of, crime and drugs, and it had a really bad rap. But I remember my childhood as something that was, it was a happy childhood. I think in a way I was sheltered from that, and I think books played a huge role. I was always at some library, like either at the school library or, so it's just one of those things. And growing up in Cabramatta, it was just a very historical time in Australia's history. In that, the White Australia policy had just been abolished, in the 70s. And, there was a few short years before my family settled there. So you can imagine what that was like growing up, with all that anti-Asian sentiment. And it was something that I think we readily accepted at the time. And, it's only looking back that that we can look at that treatment and, you know, the way we were received, and we can say, well, a lot of it was wrong, but, you know, the point was, you know, and it's something that I've been writing about quite a bit. It was just, I guess, a part of Australia just adjusting to its Asian, you know, the new wave of the Asian immigrants that had come in. As we were growing up, because we were the first generation really to grow up, our hometown of Cabramatta got a quite a bad rap just because it had become, there was this stranglehold with gangs and with drugs, and there were all these problems, and then it was sort of like this, oh, well, look, this is what happens, mm-hmm. you know, when you let Asians into your country. But they were terrorising our community as well, and I think we suffered quite a bit, and it was through no fault of our own. I mean, I remember people saying, well, why can't you do something about it? And I thought, well, what am I supposed to do? What power do I have to stop these gangs, you know, and their reign of terror? So, yeah, it was just, you know, it's not something that's unique. I mean, it happens, you know, to many people, and it still happens today. If you see recently with all the you know, anti-Asian sentiment because of coronavirus, so it seems to just come in waves.
So Lang, so for most, writing is not a very lucrative career, and coming from mm-hmm. Asian family, does that affect it? And what made you decide to pursue it anyway?
Well, I remember when I was in my final year of school, and I had to make a choice between writing or art, because they were both subjects that I loved. But right. obviously, I've always loved writing more. But I was just thinking, well, what would be something that, you know, I could placate my parents and say, well, you know, I've got to fall back. And I thought, well, I could always be an art teacher. So I thought, you know, I'd choose art. And you know, I did art for a while as well. I had a fashion label, Akina, where I, you know, it was illustration based, and I created all the artwork for that. And I studied art at the College of Fine Arts in Sydney. You know, I really loved my time there. But I think, you know, everything that I created, it had a very strong narrative aspect to it, and everything that I did started with a pen and paper, and I think life has a funny way of pulling you back to what you love. And I remember I was, you know, it was like a period in my life where everything was going really great. I had this fledgling fashion label. It was winning awards, and it was getting all this like great, fantastic attention. And I don't know, I think something just happened. I think I was just saying yes to everything. I was working like 14, 15-hour days, you know. Everything was handmade, hand-sewn. It was it was quite a lot of stress. And then I just, one day I just completely stopped. Like, that was it. And there was no, like, stopped answering my emails, moved back home. And, yeah, I remember this so clearly. And I was just in my old bedroom in my parents' house writing poems, and everyone was just like, what are you doing? I think, you know, looking back, I think I had a breakdown, but I don't think that's something that you recognize at the time. At the time, it felt like amazing. I felt like it was like a great epiphany, and I was doing this, and, you know, it was something that I was really excited about. I was writing just poem after poem. It was like really ridiculous, and a lot of those poems you know, form a large part of Love and Misadventure. So I think what I'm trying to say is that I didn't really know what I was doing then, and I was turning my back on this, you know, this career that I'd built, you know, even if it was still in the initial stages. It was a promising career, and it was something that I turned my back on, essentially. But I guess I just had a gut feeling. I just knew that this was what I had to do, and it's what I did, and I followed that, as crazy as insane as it was. And, you know, that's what's led me here. So, you know, in hindsight, it's the absolute best thing I could have done. I just don't think the fashion industry was for me. It was quite, it was quite a competitive place. It was quite cutthroat, and for someone as introverted and shy as me, it just didn't really fit with my personality. And writing is something that suits me much better, and it's what I love. So I'm so glad to be here.
What were your parents' reaction when you told them that you want to pursue art? Have they always been supportive?
Well, I think it's something that they always remember me as, like, the girl, little girl with the scissors in her hands. I remember one time I'd locked myself in my parents' room, and they were frantically banging on the door. You know, they were really frightened.
Right.
And they finally got in, and I was like, I had a pair of scissors in my hands, and I was just cutting up the, family album. because I said, I want to give daddy a haircut. So that's like one of the, the things of legend. So I guess in our family, and I think that my parents always knew I'd do something creative because I was incredibly creative. If I didn't have any paper or any like fabric or whatever to work with, I'd go out into the backyard and I'd dig up the garden and I'd look for clay. And for as long as I can remember, if I've got a project, if I'm working on something that I love, I'm happy, like, regardless of what else is going on in my life. That's.
Did they ever, like, want you to, or try to convert you to go to, like, the more safe route?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I remember I said to them, look, it's Army Girl, it's okay. I have I can always marry someone. Yeah, I can always marry a boy if I had to, if that was like, my fallback position. But I said that just to, because obviously they were worried about me. But and they did try to marry me off, but, it didn't work, as Asian parents do. But I think everything's really worked out. And, I'm really, really blessed. I took my mum on tour to the Philippines. She absolutely loved it. She had people pulling her over for selfies, and
that's amazing.
She got to see it from backstage, and it was a magical experience. So I really loved having her there.
So where do you draw your inspirations from for your poetries?
The inspiration comes from everywhere. It's almost like a magical thing, and it's something that I found really hard to explain, because ever since I was a little girl, it's almost like I've had just lots of ideas flooding in. I don't know where they come from, but they do. And my problem always is, what inspiration to go with rather than running out of inspiration. There are so many projects I want to do. And, sometimes I do multiple projects at once, and it's just something that I really, really love. But my favorite thing is just having one main project to work on. And, that's something that I'm always on the hunt for. And I can go through periods, but they never last for more than a month like a few months where there's nothing that I'm really passionate about, and I can get a bit low if I don't have that to cling on to, if that makes sense. But it's just always been a part of my life. Inspiration has never been a problem for me. In fact, the way I just look at life is always like, how can I get past this chore or past this hurdle so I can have my time to just, sit in my own little corner and just create something.
Wow, spoken like a true artist. It really is, like, to get the chore done so you can start doing creative stuff again. Wow, that's amazing. Why do you think your poetry's resonated with a lot of young people?
I guess it's because I'm just, pouring out my soul, and that's a great thing about literature, seeing yourself reflected in other people. And I've definitely had that, in that I've come across a poem or a passage in a book, and I felt as though it really understood me, in that moment when nothing else did, and that's a wonderful feeling. And it's wonderful to know that is the kind of recognition that my work is getting.
Awesome. So right now, of course, how do you feel that you are also part of the movement that really introduced poetry to the modern generation?
Oh, I think it, you know, it happens in waves, just like, you know, a lot of things in life. You know, the beat poets, they were very, in the 50s, they were very anti-establishment, and, you know, poetry was something that was falling by the wayside and people had forgotten about. But you know, it'll come back, and I think that's just out of, you know, a need just to capture a moment in time. And I think at the moment we're living through very interesting times. Better or worse, there are a lot of changes. You know, I think people forget that, you know, my generation of writers, we're the first ones to write to the backdrop of social media and to have that kind of scrutiny, you know, and to be a woman and to be an Asian woman, you know, writing. I remember when I first posted up a picture of myself, it was my work had already gone viral and Love and Misadventure was already out, and yeah, I remember seeing a tweet saying, what the heck, like, Langley Ave is Asian, my life is a lie. I think a lot of people thought that I was, you know, a middle-aged white man, or I was a dead poet. And there was that misconception as well, which I thought was funny. So I think, you know, for artists, we don't really like to put ourselves out there so much. I think it's something that I've had to do, and it's definitely been out of my comfort zone. But you know, at the same time, I'm glad that I've done it, and I feel very proud of that.
Is it harder for you as an Asian woman, and even in the writing scene, would you say?
Well, that's the thing, like, I don't know any different, so I can't really compare my experience to anyone else, because it's completely unique to my own. And I say this to all writers, you cannot compare yourself to anyone else. I mean, I think often the world tries to put you into a box, but I think you have to just make your own way, and I think your internal voice has to be stronger than the voices outside, and you just have to really trust in that and believe in that.
Yeah. So now that we're on this topic, like, social media became a tool for you, of course, to showcase your work and reach absolutely. Audiences. So what are the positive aspects of it, and what are the negative aspects of being a writer in the social media era, per se?
Well, I think it's really great to have that feedback in real time, and there's almost this, like, wonderful collaborative energy. It's great to be able to talk to your readers, you know, and it's a wonderful thing, and I don't think a lot of authors had that in the past. I mean, I remember when I was growing up, I didn't know what my favorite authors looked like. I mean, sometimes there was a photo on the book jacket, but that was rare. Or you'd write a letter to them and you'd get one back like 2 months later, you know, via... That was the way fan mail worked. It wasn't like, you know, just send a tweet. So I think that's definitely been the most amazing thing, to just be able to, you know, talk to my readers and engage with them. The negativity, I mean, I don't really have to, you know, go into it or too much, but it is quite a horrible place sometimes, and there's a lot of nastiness and bullying, and that's been a real disappointment of mine. I don't really understand it. I don't understand this kind of, you know, need to take people down or to just be horrible or to say really, like, mean sexist things. I mean, it's just right. Insane. Yeah, but, you know, I think it's just one of those things that you just learn to live with. I think I've had that all my life growing up. You know, it wasn't an easy place to grow up where I did, you know, in that environment. So I feel that a lot of my life is just... you know, it's just like a more pronounced version of my earlier life. And I think that's what happens in your life, that, you know, your future echoes your past, but, you know, just in a much bigger way. But because it does, then you're prepared for it, in a way. It's not like you're just launched into the deep end. It's something that you spend your whole life preparing for.
Correct. So what you've experienced in the past will happen again, but this time you're more equipped and you've learned your lesson and know how to move forward better.
Yeah, I mean, that's always been my experience. I don't know if it's been the same for everyone else, but I find that's the way, and it's just all a part of, you know, learning and growing as a person.
Right. So Lang, you've already written numerous books on poetry and even a novel that became bestsellers.
Yeah.
Is there like an added layer of pressure for you to hit the best-selling list every time you write a book? If yes, how do you manage or overcome such pressure?
No, I don't. I actually don't feel the pressure at all. I never have, like, if that makes sense. It's just been something that's happened. Like I said, when I was a kid, I used to just put my work out there. And the thing about it is, people don't realize that there's a real lag when you, from when you create a project to it being like, you know, going through production and what have you. There's a period of time. So usually by the time, I don't know if I should be saying this, but usually by the time my projects come out, I'm not really even thinking about them all that much. I mean, I have to do all the promotional stuff and everything, which is just a part of my contract, and it's something that I'm happy to do, and it always gives me that, you know, that kind of awesome opportunity to connect with my readers. But seriously, I think once the project is out into the world, you're already, like, you know, knee-deep into the next project. And that's the case with me anyway. So that's where my headspace is. I'm just thinking about the project that I'm working on. And I think it's really nice to be on the bestsellers chart. But I think there are other, more fulfilling ways to measure success, in that, you know, I, for example, if someone writes me a letter and says, you know, your book impacted me in this way, that for me personally is more special. If that makes sense.
That's super true. I mean, like, I mean, as an artist, you know, as a fellow artist, I get messages like that, and it's such a fulfilling feeling,
yeah,
you know? Like,
absolutely. That human connection, it is. And that's something that, as artists, I think, and that's why a lot of us are so poor. I was a starving artist for such a long time. Like, I was... you know, I remember initially I wanted to hand make all my books, and, you know, Michael, who's a lot more practical than I am, just said, I don't think you're going to be able to keep up with the, you know, the demand, you know, and I've sold over 1 million books now, well over 1 million.
Congrats.
So he was right, wasn't he? Yeah, so it's just one of those things. But like I said, for artists, we're not really chasing the money, if that makes sense. I mean, I'm absolutely delighted that, you know, I'm able to pay my bills, I'm able to write, you know, and support my family. And that's something that is, like, wonderful. But I think we're just so insular, and we're so into the creativity, that it's almost like a second thought.
Yeah. Like, for me, I feel like I'm chasing the fulfillment more than chasing after the money. Like, it's the fulfillment of being able to inspire someone, to see them. I mean, that's why we have this podcast, Your Dose of Inspiration, you know, to put a voice and get to talk to all these amazing Asians with such amazing stories, like you yourself. Like, your story has been amazing.
Thank you.
And earlier you also mentioned that you wanted to hand make all your books, and I guess that also means all the drawing, all the illustrations, and I think that also shows that you're also an illustrator. So when did you discover that you have this talent for drawing, also for illustrating?
Drawing doesn't come as naturally to me, and it's something that I'm not as confident in, but it's something that I do enjoy, but I need to have a lot of time to do it, so I can't just sit there and create something. It's quite a long process for me, and it's always been that way. I think I learned to draw because I thought, well, it's a great way to have people, you know, to draw attention to my writing. So now that I feel that my writing has definitely taken, you know, it's now the front runner by far. That's not something I have to do anymore, but because of the pandemic, I've had a bit more time on my hands, and my book that I've been working on, which comes out, it's a poetry compilation book similar to another one of my books, Memories, where I also did the illustrations. I did all the artwork for it, and I'm really, really excited about it. And it was just a really cool and exciting period. And awesome. I can't wait to see it go out into the world.
When will that be? Can you share
that? I think it's the title is The Gift of Everything. And it comes out, I think, in October. Oh, and it's going to be a hardcover gift book. So I'm very excited about that. It's going to be so pretty.
What was the toughest experience you faced and you overcame as a writer?
That's a really interesting question. I think probably writing a novel, my first novel, Sad Girls, because I didn't really know if I could write a novel, if that makes sense. Like, I thought, well, you know, I'm sort of writing these longer pieces of prose and it's something that I really enjoy and there's a lot of narrative in it. I remember writing my first draft and sending it to my agent, who's worked on so many amazing, amazing novels. And he sort of said, oh, well, you know, I was a little bit disappointed with his reaction. He says, it needs quite a lot of work. But he said, look, you've got a very good ear for dialogue and conversation. And that's something that comes naturally to you. So I took that on board and I worked on it really hard for a long time. And I think it's like writing your first novel with Sad Girls, you know, having that hindsight and looking back, it's like learning to ride a bicycle and at the same time riding the bicycle. So I'm learning to write a novel as I'm writing the novel. So poems came much more easier to me. And I'm working on a third novel now. And I think with each time you go through that experience, I compare it to like The Matrix and learning code and sort of being able to see, you know, the technical aspects of it. And, you can never really read a novel. In a way, you can't read a novel without looking at the technical part of it as well, which is really fantastic. But that was probably my greatest challenge, getting familiar with that craft, and it's something that I absolutely love. So I'm sure there'll be many, many more novels in the future.
I'm excited for those. I'm just curious. Like, do you think? I mean, will it be a dream of yours to have one of your novels become a screenplay?
I don't know.
Every writer?
Yeah,
or is that something like selective?
You know, it's nice to have these things, if that makes sense. It's like a really cool thing. I wouldn't say I sit there kind of dreaming about it. Like I say, I always, like, my head is always filled with the project that I'm working on at the moment. And what I really dream about are, you know, the characters and, how the plot is going to work. And, I dream about things like what the cover's going to look like. But, yeah, absolutely, that would be, like, a lovely thing to happen, I think, for anyone to have something you've created, taken and interpreted in that way. Absolutely.
Interesting. So... You talked about poems being a lot easier for you. So what do you think makes a good poem, or what makes good poetry?
I think poetry is very subjective. So there's no real way to say, you know, is that a good poem? Is that a bad poem? I think it just depends on what resonates with you. And the great thing about poetry is that it's almost like a mirror. It reflects what you're going through at the time. It's just one of those things that you can read a poem and not have it resonate, and then, you know, 10 years later come across it and the poem hasn't changed. It's you that's changed. And I think that's the beautiful thing about poetry. And I think it is establishing that emotional connection. It's something that you feel, and sometimes in a way that you can't even really explain.
That's so deep. What you said there is the words, the words don't change, but it's how you see it, how you interpret it, right? Like,
you've changed.
Oh my God.
Yeah, definitely.
So, Lang, what are the lessons you have learned so far as a writer?
I think always to trust your voice and to be guided by that, and to choose the voices that you listen to. Don't listen to some like idiot ranting on on Twitter, you know, have like a small circle of people that you respect and trust. That I find that's always the way, and that's definitely something that I have. I've learned that, you know, just put your work out there. Like, I always compare this to Finding Nemo, where the father is so overprotective. And then Doris says, well, if you never let him do anything, then, you know, then he'll never do anything. And I think that's what you've got to do with your writing. I mean, people are so afraid of having their work stolen. And that's going to happen. That happens to me all the time. But, you know, and it's happened to me since I was a kid. I remember this girl took one of my poems, and she just changed the last two lines and she published it in our school yearbook. So, under her name.
Oh,
yeah, like I wouldn't know. Anyway, but that happens. That's the nature of people. That's the nature of the internet. But you know what? Don't get hung up on it. You're going to create better stuff. Like, if you're the one that is being ripped off, then you're the creator. You're not the follower. So I think that's something to bear in mind. Just keep creating work. And, you know, and just have that courage. And the third thing is have the courage to just follow. To just follow that desire. If it's there and it's pulling you, then, you know, there's a reason. Like what we spoke about earlier, where I was like just writing poetry. I turned my back on my Korean fashion and I was just writing poem after poem. I think that sometimes if something is pulling you in that direction, then you've got to follow it, especially if it's such a strong pull.
All right, thank you for that, Lang. So now let's move on to the part two of this podcast, which is the little game that we're going to call, well, Riddle Time. So since you're great with words, Lang, so we thought we prepared a little riddle game for you. And yeah, let's see how you do.
Okay, I'll try my best.
First one. I'm tall when I'm young, and I'm short when I'm old. What am I?
Tall when you're young, short when you're old. I have absolutely no idea. A tree? A person?
Think opposite. No, actually, I think there are two answers to this. One of them is something that you use all the time. Back then, when you write.
A pencil?
There we go. The other answer actually is a candle.
Is a what, sorry?
A candle.
Oh, yeah, true.
All right, number two. What question can you never answer yes to?
I don't know, sorry.
It's something that you do every night.
That I do every night, okay. Sleep? Sorry, it's just like, yeah, no idea, sorry.
So the question is, are you asleep yet?
Oh, okay, yeah.
Something you can never answer. Okay. Third one. What has words but never speaks?
What has words but never speaks? A book?
Yes! There you go.
That was easy.
All right, one more. What kind of band never plays music?
A rubber band?
Yay! All right, thank you very much. Lang, before we let you go, what is your special message for all the aspiring writers out there?
Well, guys, you know, go out there, show your work, keep writing. Just go for it. You never know what's going to happen. Don't be afraid at all. Even if you want to start small and just start showing your work to your family and friends, but don't get discouraged. Put it out there. There's never been a better time. With social media, you can, get your work up, get your tags on and go for it and see what happens. You just never know.
Yes, thank you very much, Lang, for that special message. And of course, thank you so much for sharing your inspiring story. And to our listeners out there, that's your dose of inspiration for today. Until next time, guys. Bye-bye.